Right, coming up here in a moment is SciTech's Major Ed Dames. Major Ed Dames worked in the U.S. government project, secret black project, to remote view. It was a 20-year government project, and Major Dames was in it for a substantial amount of time, actually. And they called him during his tenure there, they called him Dr. Doom eventually, because of some of the things that he began to report to his superiors. Now, Ed Dames, Major Ed Dames, comes to us tonight on the heels of two really, really big hits. Two big hits. One, Egypt Air Flight 990. He said there was an altercation in the cockpit. There was a man involved. That Flight 990 was killed. Remember that? And the next week, there it was in the headlines. Then, of course, the Egyptian government got involved. And you just don't hear a lot about it anymore, do you? Have you noticed that? Have you noticed the news blackout on Flight 990 news? Well, it's political, folks. The Egyptian government doesn't like it. So he hit that one dead on. I mean dead on. And then you may recall that he predicted on the last program the loss of the second Mars probe, the Mars Polar Lander, he said would be lost. And I'll be damned if it's not gone. As we know, yesterday's program with Richard Hoagland and, of course, the news from NASA, they have given up. It's lost in space, maybe, according to NASA. So, that same Major Ed Dames is coming up in a few moments. Where we're going to go tonight, I have no idea. But with this kind of record, close-in record, you know, predicting these close... I shouldn't say predicting, because it's not prediction. Remote viewing is not prediction. It is viewing an event, past, present, or future. But with the short-term... I mean, you got to give it to the guy. The short-term predictions... Damn it, there I go again. The short-term visions... That'll work... that have come to pass so quickly, where you have your neck so far out that it could be chopped off if you're wrong very quickly. With that kind of prediction, damn it, it's not prediction. With that kind of viewing under his immediate belt, you're going to want to be listening tonight to see what he has to say. Now, I want to give you my normal warning, and that is... they don't call him Dr. Doom for nothing. We're entering a tumultuous time toward the millennium. Stuff is going to happen. And you're going to be hearing about some of it tonight. Visions. Now, it's going to scare the hell out of a lot of you. And if you have children in the room, obviously get them out. If this sort of thing disturbs you and it fixes it so you cannot sleep, then tune out. There are lots of places you can go across the radio dial where you'll hear friendly little warm and fuzzy things that'll help you to sleep. This tonight will not be one of those places. That is my standard warning. Please observe it. Coming to us from the safe Hawaiian Islands, he has viewed that fact, is Major Ed Dames, SciTech's Major Ed Dames, who is a remote viewer. The company of SciTech does have remote viewing training tapes. If you decide you would like to do this, we will tell you as the program progresses how you can get those. But here he is. Hey, Ed, hello.
Aloha, Art.
Aloha. How do you like the islands, Ed?
Maui is a paradise.
Yeah, it is.
But I already knew that before I got here.
Yeah, I bet you... Did I tell you I once worked on Maui?
Yes, you did.
It is...
Haleakala.
That's right. It is, in fact, a paradise. There's no question about it. The only reservation that I have about paradise is that it's unrelenting. In other words, it is so beautiful, so warm, so consistently perfect temperature-wise that it can almost get you now. I mean, don't you ever long for a good old blizzard or maybe a big windstorm or, you know, I don't know.
Yes. Yes, you can get island fever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it really is paradise, unrelenting paradise.
Yeah, it is. It's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it.
Well, yes, that's right. So there you are. All right. I don't even know where to begin. The last time you were on, the big news was Flight 990.
Witness the turtle. It only makes progress by sticking its neck out.
Well,
so people thought I stuck my neck out.
I thought you were, you know, I said to myself, man, he's really done it this time, because they're going to bring up these black boxes in the next couple of days, and he's going to get blown right out of the water.
Now, remember that our company's reputation is on the line on something like that.
There goes
me and the company. But it really wasn't a risk at all. Once you master technical remote viewing skills, you can trust the data enough to be able to do that and know that you're not taking a risk. That, at the cause of the crash of Egypt Air Flight 990, was only takes intermediate skills in remote viewing. Many of the tape trainees could have done that, so it really was not a difficult problem to solve.
Well, it sure did blow me away. I mean, when they came out with the news the next week after they brought up those flight recorders, I went, oh, my God.
Yeah, I told you. What they were bringing, when the cockpit voice recorder is brought up, it will validate what I just said.
Yeah, and it did. Is there any more on it? Have you done any further work on 9? Interesting thing. You know, they were saying, rather conclusively on our side, what had occurred, what they thought had occurred. And then the Egyptian government began to apply incredible pressure politically. And now you don't even hear about Flight 990 anymore.
It's been politicized, but that could have been predicted. It doesn't take a remote viewer to predict what would have happened for Egypt Air and the Egyptian government to even suggest or intimate that one of their crew members had a psychological problem would be
unacceptable.
Very unacceptable to their State Department. It reminds me, the situation reminds me very much of the O.J. Simpson trial. My company, when we were based in Beverly Hills, was very, very much involved in locating the Nicole Simpson murder weapon, the weapon itself. We spent a lot of time and effort to pinpoint the location of the weapon and attempt to retrieve it. But it reached a point where it would not have made any difference anyway, because the trial was so political in nature.
I watched every day of that trial religiously. I don't know what it was about that trial, but...
Well, the politics overruled justice in that case. And this situation, Flight 990, reminds me of that in certain ways.
Politics actually overrules a lot of stuff, Ed.
Unfortunately, yes.
A lot of stuff. Listen, we've got a presidential race looming on the horizon, assuming the horizon continues to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And George W. Bush is running, and so is McCain, and McCain has now, in some polls, taken a lead over Bush. Have you remote viewed the results of the next presidential election?
No, I have not. It's not something that I would normally have any interest in whatsoever, but it is eminently doable. In past elections, we've done things like this. It's tantamount to remote viewing the outcome of a sporting event, the Super Bowl or something like that. Now, you can't resolve the problem, however, unless it has already been adjudicated and the likelihood is 100% in terms of the matrix or the collective unconscious. And that may be as late as 2 weeks prior to the election, or it could be much earlier, up to 6 months or 7 months.
In other words, until it becomes locked into the timeline, so to speak, you can't say absolutely?
That's correct. You can say that. Until the likelihood on the horizon becomes I use that term loosely, becomes 100%, we're not going to be able to determine the winner. But let's say that the outcome is already determined in the matrix, in the collective unconscious,
right,
where the area that we remote view, mind is unitary. It's a single mind in the universe. We're all parts of that. So that everything exists as a pattern of information, a thing or an event. If this is already a fait accompli, then we can very easily remote view the outcome and describe the winner of the next presidential election. We can describe the person physically, the person's family, and it's easy to deduce based upon very rudimentary data and a very cursory sketches who is the winner, if that has been resolved. I remember an interesting case years ago where we gave this target to my vice president, the winner of the next presidential election. We gave this target to my vice president and some students that I had at the time.
Yes.
And all of the participants in this project who worked this blind, they did not know what the target is, the
right,
same way that we train. They sketched people sitting in front of a television. That's it. Not a winner of an election. And that is the way that the collective unconscious, or the matrix, and by the way, we used that term long before the movie did, that told us that the outcome had not yet been determined as far as we're concerned.
Well, what was the, what did that mean, people sitting in front of a TV? They were watching the election results come in?
That's right. They were just watching the election results, and that's how the matrix, that's the symbol that the matrix chose for us to sketch to allow us, to let us know that the problem had not yet worked itself out. In terms of all the decisions by many numbers of people. That's why it's so much easier to remote view geological events or material failures or something like that in an engineering sense than it is to remote view the outcome of an election where so many individual decisions are necessary for a threshold event to be reached.
Well, let's take an event that just occurred down in Australia where something has crashed into a reservoir.
I heard that report.
Yeah, right. Okay, good. So something serious crashed into a reservoir. And
Gyra.
That's right. And they have no idea what it is. They have guards there. It may have come from the sky. People saw something flash from the sky. That would be an event. How hard would that be to remote view?
A piece of cake, or an absolute piece of cake. In fact, what I might do tonight during your breaks is, if I can here, I might remote view that for you. The danger there is that when a person remote views, if I engage in this, it takes a few minutes for my conscious awareness to pop back all the way to a left brain modality. So I'm bilocating. Half of my conscious awareness would be on the target, that is, the event at Gyra, and the other half would be attempting to communicate with you.
Well, sure, you're in a kind of a stress situation where you're on the air, and your mind would be on the program. So, but you're well trained enough that you could potentially do it.
Yes. In fact, I might give that a crack tonight. That would be a fun thing for me to do because I have a lot of fun in my work, too. It's a very powerful tool, but it's still, it is fun. That's why this month marks the 10th anniversary since I founded the company 10 years ago. So we're looking at what we want to do for the next 10 years. And I'd like to take the Dr. Doom hat off, although it's kind of glued to my head. I think my head has grown into it.
Well, look. It's not your fault. I mean, we are in very turbulent times. The millennium is about to change. Y2K looms. The sun is going berserko. A lot of things are happening. And you can't help it. It's like the news. The news really can't help reporting what happens if it's sort of negative. Most news is negative. That's what people are interested in. And so it's really the same for you. If you see a negative event in the future, then you got to tell it like it is, right?
That's correct. We've been trying to shift our focus, however, onto some positive events. And there is one that I'll talk about tonight.
All right.
Unfortunately, there are some others that are less than positive.
No doubt. Hold it right there. We'll be right back. Ed Danes is my guest. And we got to ask about the Super Bowl winner. What do you think? Jacksonville? What it looks like right now, but you could always be surprised. All right, once again, SciTech's Major Ed Danes. Ed, welcome back.
Thank you.
Where were we?
We were meandering about, and you were talking about some boloids, possible other things. You know, when we remote view, we don't make any preconceived, we have no preconceived notions or assumptions about what a target, a person, a place, a thing, or an event may be. Even though the reports will state unequivocally that this was a such and such or so and so, we as remote viewers, as professionals, to never go into a target or a problem set with any preconceived notions about what something may be.
Okay. Are you an NFL fan?
I'm not a sports fan.
Uh-huh. So then, would it be tough for you to view the winner of the Super Bowl?
Oh, no. Quite easy.
See, I live in a state where you can bet on stuff like that, Ed. I could make a lot of money.
I'm not a gambling man, and I don't really get a sense of satisfaction by winning money that way. I mean,
I know. Oh,
but
I do.
It is quite easy to do that. If the game has been resolved, then what one can do in terms of our technology, technical remote viewing, is the problem set ends up the remote viewer ends up sketching and describing many times the uniforms, the color of the uniforms of the winning team, symbols on the helmet.
Yes, you mean the colors.
Or even in one case, I remember the Green Bay Packers. One of the remote viewers actually sketched the city of Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Really?
And so that's all. Those are ways in which the collective unconscious answers the problem, cause and effect. Again, it's got to be already resolved. That could be
here's where I want to stop you. This is interesting. It has to be in time already resolved, doesn't it? In other words,
yes.
What's going to happen?
Time the way mind is outside of time. Think of mind just for working theory purposes as the fifth dimension, time as the fourth dimension. So mind is looking down at this big flat plane of events. So one can look ahead and see the outcome of an event that's occurring now. Events really have a beginning and an end. So the event is sort of stretched out in time. So what we do as remote viewers is look ahead along this event line and describe the outcome, the tail end of the event line. And in the case of, let's say, the Super Bowl, this has to be one team, right?
It's
not a quantum effect where it can be both.
Right.
It's a discrete outcome, a binary decision.
Right.
So it's quite an easy problem once it's been resolved. If it has not yet been resolved from our perspective in linear time, then it's fuzzy.
Now, there are a million variables. I mean, the wind could catch a ball. There could be a turnover. Some idiot could drop it like they always do. And things could happen.
Correct. But unconscious, the power of the unconscious mind to sort through all that is far more powerful than any computer in terms of processing information. Remote viewing is direct knowledge, so we turn our attention immediately without any red tape, without any intervening analysis to the solution of the problem.
Well, Ed, I have no such ethical reservations about winning a lot of money, so if you want to pass me some colors when you get them, feel free.
You know, we can do that, and as long as I don't have it's of no ethical consequence to me either. Again, it ethics doesn't play a part in something like that. It's just fun for me.
That does sound like kind of a fun project.
When is the Super Bowl?
It'll be in January. I can't give you the exact date right now. I don't know if it's going to be in...
We'll take a look at that. Now, there's something interesting, though, however, about this process. If, for instance, any of the information about the winning team could be used to alter the outcome, then we run into the paradox problem. If that's the case, then the outcome of the game is not resolvable. Let me make it simpler.
In other words, well, okay, well, let me simplify it. Suppose, for example, that the, God forbid, the quarterback of Jacksonville, which looks very likely, were to be injured between now and Super Bowl time, or even playoff time. That could certainly change the outcome. If somebody knew Jacksonville was going to win, and they intentionally sent some 350-pounder straight at the quarterback and did something awful to him, that could change the outcome, right?
That's right. But if that intent and if that action was also highly likely, then the remote viewer would not be able to determine the winner of the game. So that's where we run into the paradox problem. In a very simple explanation, if I wanted to remote view where you would eat dinner tonight, let's say you were going to a restaurant or eating at home, if I were to remote view where you would eat dinner at the next night, that would be a fairly easy thing to do in most cases, at least 8 to 10 hours before you did that. It would already be resolved. But if there were any intent, and unconscious knows this, by the way, the universal mind knows that the intent is real. If there were any intent for me to tell you that I know where you're going to eat and then allow you to change your mind, then I would not be able to remote view the outcome in the first place. That's the paradox problem.
All right. We're looking at January 30th of 2000 for Super Bowl, and it's going to be in Atlanta.
That's right. Okay, that's a done deal.
All right. We
have had a lot of people make a lot of money in horse racing, especially some of our English students. They've taken these skills for their own purposes, and they've specialized in winning horse races.
Why not? That's what everybody says about this kind of thing. If you really can, in effect, see a future event, then why not capitalize on it? As stock market, lotteries, I know numbers are hard, sporting event outcomes, there's a million different ways that one could potentially profit.
That's correct. But what are you profiting at? I mean, what does it get you? It doesn't make
you money.
Yeah, it's money, but that's all that it is. What are your goals in life? I think there's
people that
do this long enough, they start to really question what the time. Life is a finite length of time, and one might start am I happy? Is money making me happy?
Yeah, I can see that. That if you were actually able to look into the future in that way, you would begin to look at life itself in a very different sort of way.
This skill has changed my life very, very in a very profound ways.
I'm still not sure that you have come back whole, the same Ed Dames, from having remote viewed Satan.
Well, I think I'm a whole lot more whole than I was before I did that.
You
enter the gates of hell, figuratively speaking,
if
you come back in one piece, it's a bigger piece.
You may be more whole because there's something else in you. I thought that was a really freaky thing for you to have done.
It was.
And now,
it was an interesting thing.
Now, look, you gave me another one last time that just blew me away, and you told me we would be losing the next Mars probe, the Mars Polar Lander. And sure enough, incredibly, two in a row, the second one is gone.
Gone.
My question for you, Ed, is, number one, how did you discern that? And number two, what the hell happened?
The answer to your first question is, we remote viewed a team of remote viewers remote viewed the Mars Polar Lander mission before it even left the ground here on Earth, or it may have been just shortly after its launch. I can't remember right now. So the outcome of that mission was decided in the collective unconscious, actually in the universal mind, way before it ever got to Mars. To mind that large in the universe, whatever the mind is everywhere. It's a field effect. Everything, every event, we're just plugged into this grander mind. So that's how we can know anything that this universal mind knows. How, having said that, however, some things are beyond our ken because we can't understand them. So, for instance, let's say there's an alien civilization or our own civilization that is, let's say 100,000 years ahead of us technologically. We might not be able to discern anything about the deep space propulsion systems or teleportation devices. Even though we can remote view them as professionals, there may not be anything we can say about them because we understand nothing, absolutely nothing. So that's what I mean about something being beyond our ken. There has to be some commonality, some common denominator, a baseline of understanding in terms of ideas and our own memories and experiences so that we can communicate the information both to ourselves and to other people. So the answer to your first question was we looked at the fate of the Mars polar lander before it took off and discerned that it would not be successful. The answer to your second question is that the Mars polar lander burned up in the atmosphere of Mars before releasing its two probes, smaller
before
probes.
Before releasing them.
Yeah. And the reason that happened was I followed this vehicle into the Martian atmosphere, remote viewing this, and it began to bounce off the atmosphere. The atmosphere appears to be a whole lot different than planetary geophysicists have calculated. There wasn't a problem so much with the trajectory or the mission itself. The problem was not understanding the Martian atmosphere. This is not my guess. Not understanding the Martian atmosphere enough to be able to predict what would happen. This probe began to actually bounce off the atmosphere, jerk around, hitting like wave fronts, a very thick atmosphere.
Wow.
And it began to bounce up and down and bounce around, became disoriented. And every time it bounced, the trajectory changed. And as a remote viewer, you can actually see the sparks, the ablation, the surfaces begin to peel away on the spacecraft to the point where it became very hot. It looked like a locomotive that was trying to conduct an emergency stop where the sparks fly off the
right,
rails.
Right, right.
That's what this thing looked like every time it bounced around in the atmosphere of Mars before it finally burned up completely. So I remote viewed that particular event as well, and I conduct a double check on my own information. The current location of the Mars Polar Lander spacecraft. Okay?
Yes.
When one remote views that, all they get is the Martian atmosphere. That's it. So it dates.
Well, that's very interesting because scientists have said that the Martian atmosphere has been variable. With these sun flares we've been having, the Martian atmosphere, when it's hit with a CME or a sun flare, expands further out than they thought.
And I wasn't aware of that.
So that's kind of an interesting result you just gave us.
The trajectory appeared to be correct, but the calculations for the atmosphere, NASA needs to study the Martian atmosphere more before they do this again.
Okay.
And that was the problem.
Could we even, through remote viewing it, could we even find out, for example, Mars once had a really thick atmosphere. It once had abundant water, I mean rivers of water. It had a stronger magnetic field. It was a viable planet. It may well have had life. We've got this rock from Mars that has microbial life, they say, within. And I remember you once saying that something beneath the surface of Mars was awakening. Does whatever is awakening beneath Mars have anything to do with our terrible, terrible record, as well as the Russians, of getting probes to Mars?
Only one probe that I talked about before was, and I'll go over that again momentarily. I did a BBC television show with Ray Bradbury about 2 years ago, where I called Mars the Forbidden Planet, and predicted that we would have some very bad luck when we attempted to fly some no-fly zones on Mars. There is an area on Mars that, for all intents and purposes, could be called a no-fly zone. And there is something there that will react to inbound objects. And the reason we knew that is because I used my military remote viewing team in the late 80s to take a look at this. And then when SciTech was first formed, when I founded it in 1989, the Russians approached us because they were desperately seeking an answer to why they lost the Phobos 2 spacecraft. This was a Martian probe.
Right.
The last thing that published thing, because the Russians held back some information from the public, the last thing that they showed the public was what appeared to be an elongated bright object that they registered on the camera in the Phobos 2 spacecraft.
I have seen that photograph.
Mm-hmm.
Something headed toward it.
That's what it appears, but appearances can be deceiving. Appearances can always be deceiving, and for us with very fallible minds, appearances mostly are deceiving.
Mm-hmm.
This was not an object. It was a burst of energy that impacted on the camera and the spacecraft and appeared to be an object. In fact, there was an object, and it fired a particle beam, not a weapon, but a particle beam, what could be an interrogation beam, at the Phobos 2 spacecraft. There was something in orbit around Mars that projected this particle beam into the Phobos 2 spacecraft.
Oh, brother.
And it burned up some of the semiconductors in the spacecraft. But what was more interesting to us was this shape. It looked like a big sand dollar, this thing that was settled down in the Martian sand that very rapidly rose from the Martian surface and came into physical contact with the Phobos 2 spacecraft.
Wow.
So we sketched this returned this to the Russians.
And what did the Russians say?
Well, they were pretty flabbergasted because it turns out that they held back some of the photos that they did not give to the public.
You mean they've still got photographs we haven't seen?
Yes. And some of the, what they did was to use that as a control to see if we were on target or not. If we were, if we could provide them with any more information than they had by using this, but attempting to see if we could describe what they had on other film.
Oh, brother.
In terms of this event. So there's an area on Mars that has sort of an air defense interrogation zone. If something overflies this area, it's going to be approached by machines.
Something not of Earth.
Correct. Machines made by another race.
Oh.
And they're essentially robots, sentient robots, only in one area of Mars.
All right. Ed, hold it there. We'll be right back. We're at the top of the hour. SciTech's Major Ed Dames is my guest. So there is something on Mars, and there's a forbidden no-fly zone. We're talking about so many remote viewers being out there. Somebody sent me this. It says, I've got a question Ed may not wish to answer, but I think it's a good one. Ed, would it be possible for someone to technically remote view another's TRV session? For example, could one remote view your secret information regarding contrails or the spiritual evolution that you hinted at during the last program?
I noticed on my bulletin board on our website that somebody asked, that must be the same person that asked that question on our bulletin board. We teach for free advanced training on the bulletin board.
Right.
We have a chat room. My vice president is in there right now in case anybody wishes to.
Oh, no kidding. She's in there live?
Yes, Joni Dorff is in there live, and there's a lot of people in our own chat room.
Okay, we've got a link up.
You
but
do.
The, let's see, the it's www.scitech, that's PSITECH.net.
And we have a wealth of information background on technical remote viewing if anybody wants to investigate the background. But
you said contrails you couldn't talk about, that it was a national security issue. and it was something that you had remote viewed. So the obvious question, going back to this faxer, is could somebody have remote viewed your session getting that information?
Unequivocally, yes. There are no secrets. Using this very powerful technology, life is an open book. So it's a world without secrets, yes. I can't keep any secrets, nor can anyone else. You still have to turn your attention and do the work using the protocols that we teach. Once you master that, Katie, bar the door.
Katie, bar the door, yeah. I like that one. Ed,
I use it to look at myself after all these years. I'm going to talk about some things that I have to talk about tonight that are of interest. But I turn this tool inward now. I want to know who and what I am. I mentioned before that, you know, I've walked out to the end of my own life and looked back. That's when I discovered what I could have been.
You looked at your own death.
Yes. I walked to that point and looked back at my life to get a perspective on my life from that point of view, no pun intended, and that's what I discovered, what I could have been.
Were you disappointed in what you have become versus what you could have been?
Well, I want very much to be what I saw from that perspective. And so it has changed my life as much as learning remote viewing ever did. It was worth learning remote viewing and mastering the skills to have seen what I saw.
What could you have been that you did not become?
Well, I'm back here trying to become what I can be, what I now know that I can be.
That's very interesting. In other words, you can view your real potential.
You can view. It turns out that this idea of destiny is real, but most people, very few people, ever attain it. And it's something very profound. It's the idea that humans are a whole lot more, not just human potential in terms of skills and things that we can do, but much, much more. And that's perceivable using remote viewing. The best way to look at it is to look at your own death using remote viewing and then turn around and look back at what you could have been. What you really are, but don't know. It's like we're swimming around and we're a bunch of larvae or maggots swimming around in the darkness, and we're all happy with the Super Bowl and, you know, with our jobs or to some degree or less degree, but we really don't know that there's a whole world out there that's very different, a whole world of light, and we stay in this muck. And there's something that's very special about us. I don't want to give that away.
You don't want to give it away?
No. I think that's something that people need to do for themselves.
So that leaves us crawling around as maggots.
Well, we swim aimlessly and complacently in the darkness. There's some real light out there, though, and it requires turning inward and really being quiet and focusing on that. And it transcends the idea of human potential. It goes past that point to what we really are. And that's all I'll say about that.
All right. We have to get something very serious out of the way. And I guess we better do it while we have the early hours here. I know that you've got a TRV session you did that predicts a terrorist act. And I want to be very careful here.
I don't want to mention the place though on the air.
Okay, maybe we better not. I think we better not do that.
No, I'll talk about it, but I do not want to mention the city. I will notify the appropriate authorities myself. I have my own contacts.
All right, then let's leave it at that.
But the attack itself is.
Let me tell the audience that I know where it's going to be. You have told me where it's going to be. So, with that in mind. Maybe I ought to put this in a sealed envelope or something.
I wouldn't. I just don't want to talk about it on the air. There's
no need to
frighten people.
I don't want you to, but go ahead and tell us what it's going to be and when.
I stumbled across this in my work about a week ago. I did not want to look at, I was not involved in counterterrorist and predictive intelligence. This is what how remote viewing started in the military. It was a predictive intelligence tool. Intelligence is useless unless it's really a predictive tool. Who wants to know what happened after the fact?
Mm-hmm.
So we use this to take a look at what is going down out there in terms of potential enemies or threats. In SciTech, for a number of years, we looked at counterterrorism things. And I stumbled across this one about a week ago. It involves an Islamic militant terrorist group that is planning, with a very high likelihood, I might add, to employ rocket-propelled grenades and automatic weapons against a certain area of a North American city. The kill zone is one that is very well known. It's the center of mass of this area, this kill zone, where this ambuscade will take place, is a very well-known place. And since this is the Christmas season, I don't want to put this out on the air, but it is important enough to have to notify certain authorities, and that's being done. I'll send you a copy of that.
Well, I have enough right here with regard to what you sent me to put it in a sealed envelope. I'm not sure what I'll do with it. Maybe I'll mail it to Keith Rowland or something. I don't know. Somebody. And just keep it and hold it, because you have given me the location. Now, there would be no service to the people to give them any more details. It would just panic people, and I don't want to do that. How significant, how serious, how many casualties, what kind of scale of incident are you talking about?
Oh, I think that we're looking at something less than Kansas City bombing or the World Trade Center bombing, something.
I think you probably meant Oklahoma City.
Yeah, yes, Oklahoma City.
Sorry. Less than that, and less than the Trade Center.
Yes, more of a symbolic event.
Mm.
Ramadan starts Thursday, generally speaking, and Christmas is this month, so.
People are always saying, well, you know, you never give specifics. Well, actually, you have. It's just that, I agree with you, this should not be put on the air.
No.
It's not responsible.
But it will be, it does appear to employ rocket-propelled grenades, perhaps even stingers. But it looks like RPGs and automatic weapons and a crossfire, an actual ambush zone.
And the rough time, any rough timeline?
This month. Mm-hmm.
Well, you really are on to these short-term things lately, aren't you?
This one I stumbled across. There's not anything that I wanted to know about. There are a lot of other things. One of them in particular I will talk about tonight. It's a wonderful target. It's SciTech's new Millennium Project, the grand prize of remote viewing, if you will, and that's something that I turned my attention to. But this one, sometimes when you're out there in the matrix on what we would call an open search,
yes,
it's as if the collective unconscious is just trying to shove this in your face, saying, you need to see this. Now, when we produce the information connected with that, now one has a responsibility. Do I or do I not tell anyone?
Yeah.
So I don't know what purpose is served by telling anyone, but I think in this case, at least...
Well, there obviously is a purpose served.
In this case, there is. There's at least the chance that additional law enforcement will be in the area at the time it goes down. However, I do not think they can prevent it.
What kind of... You would go to, I don't know, the FBI or whoever. In this case, domestic terrorism, I would imagine the FBI. What kind of greeting do you expect from the authorities bearing this kind of information?
Well, don't forget my roots, Art. You know, I come from an intelligence background. So there were many cases that we had where we worked with the FBI, the Secret Service, Drug Enforcement Agency.
So they take you seriously.
They know who I am. And they know who SciTech is, especially the CIA. CIA has asked for courtesy copies of our reports in the past. So I've still got the connections that I need to get the information out there. And in this case, it's the responsible thing to put this out.
Well, America has been almost unreasonably lucky with regard to the amount of domestic terrorism from foreign sources that we have suffered. I mean, it's been incredible. The FBI and the CIA have caught almost all of them with rockets and destructive devices of all kinds. You know, they've stopped people on the highway and the rest of it. And one has to wonder if it's been more than just blind luck and good hard work.
Both. Both. But that can't go on forever, of course. And it hasn't. Oklahoma City and the world, the Trade Center.
That's true.
Cases in point.
Absolutely true. All right. Hold on, Ed. We're at the bottom of the hour. My guest is Major Ed Dames, SciTech's Ed Dames. I'm Art Bell. And this is Coast to Coast AM.
Her hair is hollow gold. Lips sweet pride. Her hands are never cold. She's got better days aside. She's kind of music on. You won't have to think twice. She's pure as New York snow. She's got better days aside.
Oh, Whitley Strieber and myself have a co-authored book that is about to, well, it's breaking all over the place. It's called The Coming Global Superstorm, and it has as its central theme, although it is, it's a researched work of fiction that's going to scare the hell out of you. And the scenario is a change, a rapid, very rapid change in the North Atlantic current, which would produce storms at a level that you can't even imagine, and it's all told in this book in a dramatic form. And that's going to be hitting the newsstands, the bookstores, and, you know, Amazon. In fact, some people are actually beginning to see it now. The reason I mention this is because I have it in front of me, and I mentioned it yesterday. I'm going to mention it again right now. It's from the New York Times. It's called Freezing Future. And it's from the New York Times News, Science, and Technology section. And it reads, there is now alarming evidence that Europe is facing an ice age. The ocean currents that give Europe its mild climate are changing. Scientists have found evidence that global warming may cause a big freeze by switching off a current called the North Atlantic Drift. Several teams have found signs that the current that brings warm water to the northwest of Europe from the Gulf Stream is being disrupted by a growing amount of fresh water entering the Arctic Ocean. This increase is a result of changes attributed to global warming, melting ice, increased rainfall, and changing wind patterns. The North Atlantic Drift is part of a global conveyor belt that, in effect, brings warm surface water from the Gulf of Mexico to Northwest Europe and then sends cold, deep water back. Now, without getting too technical on you, it's because of all the new fresh water. A scientist recently announced that measurements made of the Arctic ice cap reveal that over the last two decades, we now have 20%, I repeat, 20%, no, correction, 40% less ice than we had two decades ago. Now, what does that mean? That means all of that fresh water is now part of the Arctic Ocean. and coming down and coming down and coming down. We know in the Antarctic, the ice sheets are melting. A couple have already broken off. There's danger to the remaining ones. There's some extremely serious environmental... What's the right word? Potentially catastrophic events underway right under our very noses. And so I want to ask Ed about this, and I know that it kind of goes to his Millennium Project. And it looks at what's going to happen environmentally to us. And Ed, these are pretty serious things that are going on. To imagine 40% of the Arctic ice is gone, gone, gone. To imagine the ozone is thinning now at an extremely alarming rate over Europe presently. Things on Earth are changing rapidly, and obviously remote viewing would have a place in trying to tell us what's going to happen.
I think that anybody that masters technical remote viewing skills is at a great advantage, has a great leg up on others that, or that masters this and looks at health, survival, one's spirituality, spends the time doing that rather than Las Vegas is has a great advantage in terms of quality of life.
I'm sure.
And life is pretty short, so.
Sure is.
But our Millennium Project, SciTech's new Millennium Project, has nothing to do with what I'm about to talk about, which is just which follows what you were just saying about the upcoming geophysical events, and I'll cover that. But there's no need to really discourse on it too much more in the future because we've reached the point where it's here already. So I'll talk about that.
Yeah, you're really right. It is here. It's happening.
About a year and a half ago, people began asking my company about Y2K. Y2K events.
I remember that, yes.
I have said over and over again that Y2K events will be eclipsed by the sun, by the behavior of the sun. This is a solar maximum. And Y2K events will pale beside what is going to happen geophysically. And I've been saying that for a couple of years now. That has not changed. So in terms of upcoming geophysical changes, and their effects upon humans, these are far more significant than Y2K or even wars, and there will be some, and the rumors of war, far more significant. The key millennial change events in the next couple of decades will be loss of the ozone layer and our extremely active sun. Remember, I don't think that atmospheric scientists and geophysicists realize the extremely strong linkage between the sun and Earth's weather. The sun pumps Earth's ionosphere. So if the sun is very active and burps out protons and electrons like never before, there's no way that Earth's atmosphere cannot be affected, and it will be. And what this will result in is what we have been saying at SciTech for the last couple of years. Desiccation and extremely dry regions, drought, very heavy weather effects, but particularly drought.
To your credit, Ed, you have been saying this now. My God, as you said, for 2 or 3 years, you've been saying that Y2K would be eclipsed by other events. Now, Y2K is only 23 days away. The solar maximum is also just about upon us. And what I said about 40% less ice at the Arctic, it's a non-trivial event. Sheets of ice breaking off in the Antarctic and melting. Hunks the size of Rhode Island just breaking off. I mean, these are real events that are taking place right now, and you're saying they are effects from the sun. Is that correct?
That's correct. So I want to cover just these few things for really the last time.
All right.
I've been saying this for years now, and I just want to review the bidding here so that people are fully apprised of what to expect in the next couple of decades, particularly the next decade.
Okay.
And that's increased volcanism. A lot of new volcanoes, a lot of new volcanic activity, but more than that, that the activity of the sun will result in a tremendous amount of crop loss and loss of fresh water. Fresh water will be an extremely important thing, consideration in the future. I'm in the Hawaiian Islands. There's a lot of fresh water here. Think about that. You know, if you really do want to move, fresh water is important. It's also important to live in a community where if the lights go out, you don't have to arm yourself. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But to get back to the geophysics here, crop loss. We're going to face a tremendous amount of crop loss. That means starvation. The first thing that will starve will be cattle. Cattle will starve, and I'll tell you what that will mean. It will mean that there'll be a lot less milk, and mothers will really have to start thinking ahead about alternatives to feed their babies, human babies. That's going to be very important very soon, because as crops fail, there won't cattle eat green things.
Yeah, and I know it's been true in past droughts that cattle, of course, can no longer be supported, and when they can't be, they are slaughtered for their meat.
That's right, and there's going to be super droughts now, very, very quickly, and crops will fail very quickly, and as they do, the stresses on crops in terms of phytopathology and plant pathology, a lot of opportunistic microbial plant diseases will pop up and decimate crops. The things that are not crops that are not killed by drought will be decimated by microbial diseases, crop diseases. And this is a very important consideration, and that will happen fast. So
and soon?
Yes, very soon. Beginning now, Art, right now. And it will increase on exponentially. In the out years, in the next century, you can look for a return of another ice age in the Northern Hemisphere. And that, you're right on the money if you wrote about that. I did not read your new book yet. I don't even know if it's out on the stand.
Probably can't get it yet. It's really not supposed to be out until December 14th, but that is what we wrote about, Ed.
Well, that happens to be something that is a fait accompli in terms of remote viewing. That's on the horizon for the next century, another ice age to follow this extreme drought.
How far is it going to go in terms of human survival? In other words, how many of us are going to make it through to the other side? Is there any way to know that?
There is, but I've stopped doing that. I don't see any utility in it. It's just a statistical interest. I think that the near-term events are more important because we're here now, and this is a good thing to prepare for. Fresh water, very important, and food. And
how long should a person prepare to be independent? For how long a period of time should we prepare?
I don't think that's the right question. I think the right question is, how should we prepare? Because it looks like this is something that's not going away, that crop loss will be in the picture for a very long period of time. So we have to start thinking in terms of changing our diets. As I said, milk for babies is going to become of paramount importance. You know, mothers will really need to think about how they're going to sustain their infants sooner than you think. And in terms of diseases, opportunistic diseases are going to just spread like wildfire because the ecology is so stressed.
Ed, are there too many of us In other words,
I think the quick answer, of course, would be yes. The stress, you know, and you, any ecology 101 student will tell you what population densities are the function of stress and population densities. That's a given. But I don't know what the real answer is.
Well, everybody knows about the experiment where they put a bunch of rats together and they end up cannibalizing each other and fighting and being very destructive, and we're not all that different. They pack us into cities. The world has a lot of space, but we're not utilizing it. We're generally packing people into very small spaces, very close together, and it seems like we're getting close to the point that the Earth will not support what we're doing. And I've never thought of it as sort of a vengeful God raining some terror retribution down upon us, but rather a simple balance that the Earth will seek. In other words, something is out of balance, and we have assisted greatly in getting it out of balance, and it will strike back as a natural returning the balance kind of thing. Does that make sense?
It does to me. There's the idea that Peter Russell and others have of Gaia, or Gaia.
Yes.
It's real. The Earth has a consciousness, one that we think that humans are very anthropocentric. We really think we're the center of the universe, if not the world. But all we are these little particles and corpuscles. We're composites of something much bigger. And really, the Earth is the Earth Mother. It gave birth to us, but our egos won't accept that. However, in remote viewing, we have ways of very interesting discoveries. You can find that planets have consciousnesses, as do stars, in ways that we cannot comprehend. Very interesting discoveries. You can find that planets have consciousnesses, as do stars, in ways that we cannot comprehend. They are alive. And not just a stone without a consciousness. In fact, the consciousness is so huge that it's beyond our comprehension. They are conscious living entities.
So then, Ed, there could be a planetary system somewhere, planets revolving about a sun, without evolved life upon them, that would have a consciousness. Those worlds themselves would have a huge consciousness. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
As a system itself, as a living system. Yes. Now, I wish I didn't have to say that. As someone who managed scientists, some of the best scientists in the United States for many years on very big defense projects, that's not something I would want to say. That sounds very scientific, but from my experience as in consciousness, as the vanguard of remote viewing in this last decade, I have to say that based upon our research and discoveries and use of remote viewing, that is in fact the case. Systems out there have consciousnesses all their own.
Well, the American native says and knows this, so I'm not surprised to hear you say it. Ed, hold on. We'll be right back. Does make a great holiday gift, and yes, we have Ed Dames in the newsletter as well. And the Somewhere in Time photographs, the brand new newsletter just got to me. Really cool. Ed, welcome back. And I've got several questions that I know you're not going to be able to answer, but I want to finish up on the geophysical changes that we face in the very, very near term. A lot of people, Ed, are going to freak out about this kind of thing. And so what do you say to them?
I say to them to reassess the priorities in their lives.
Yeah, that's a good thing to say to them.
And I think that this is, you know, all of this doom and gloom is not necessarily a bad thing. It might be a wake-up call.
I know, that's what the Hopis say, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but that depends on your point of view.
I agree.
In other words, for a lot of people, there's going to be some bad hair days.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, I agree also.
All right, two questions that I know you're not going to be able to answer. But I've got to read them because I'm getting droves of faxes and email. Art, please ask Ed to go into some detail about the contrails. Please. They're now a daily occurrence here in Boise, Idaho. I saw them on the NFL Sunday while watching the St. Louis Rams. Carolina Panthers, a ground-level shot caught the top of the stadium in the sky, and the contrails were streaked all across the stadium sky. This is now so obvious, it's being put in our face. Please, what is it?
Art, this is one of the few times in the more than 3 years that I have done your show where, again, I cannot comment on what some of those contrails are. And I'll reiterate what I've said in two of your past programs when
yes.
on air. And that is because some of the contrails are part of a defense program to protect this country. If I were to tell your listeners and yourself what this program was,
it would breach.
Answers. Number one, I would go to jail very quickly, would not pass go, would not collect $200. And number two, your listeners would be very angry at me.
Okay.
Because I would have given away.
Let's dissect this a little bit. You said you'd go to jail.
Yes.
Now, is this information regarding the contrails that you acquired by remote viewing, or is it a combination of remote viewing and actual knowledge?
It's a combination of remote viewing and actual knowledge of a real program that is highly classified.
Yeah, well, you'd go to jail then. You're right. Hmm. Is there some reassurance that you can give people, or maybe you've already done that by saying that it is a defense matter?
No, it is not a reassuring matter, because if I told you why our government was doing this,
I'd be angry.
You would be even more, you would be very unreassured, because the reason they're doing it is a tactic of desperation, and I just can't go into that, Art.
All right. I knew that.
Now, this is the first time, you know, you have to cut me some slack on this. It's the first time on your show, I think.
It's true.
I have said I cannot talk about this.
I know.
Every other instance on Aurora, advanced deep space propulsion projects, electro-gravitational vehicles, those kinds of things, I was able to say I got this through remote viewing. But in this case, it is something that I was part and parcel of in terms of intelligence collection while I worked at the levels of Office of Secretary of Defense as a scientific and technical intelligence collection officer.
Enough said. All right. This then. Art, what about the people who could avoid being killed by knowing when and where to avoid the terrorist act predicted by Mr. Dames? It seems irresponsible not to give out this information. Ron in Mountain View, California.
It's a tough call, Art. It's a tough call because I am not sure if I would be able to prevent any death, not even one, for instance. By giving away the attack site, the center of mass of the attack site.
Right.
So the best thing I can do is provide the authorities the information. Because if a terrorist wants to attack, they're going to do it. There's only so much that one can do to try to surveil an area.
Yeah, we're a free country.
Number one. Number two is that technical remote viewing is still ahead of its time. It's catching up. It has a large following in science and technology in the medical arena, where we've done some very impressive work, but it's still catching up. Law enforcement has not come around yet to using TRV, although we've trained many police officers as individuals. It is not accepted except by small circles within, let's say, the FBI and certain drug enforcement agencies, where they've really seen how valuable it is. It isn't of widespread acceptance yet. It will be maybe 5 years from now. So we're just not going to make a big impact by telling law enforcement that, hey, you're going to expect an attack right here. The most that we can gain is the most that I hope to gain, and that's some increased surveillance because of our track record.
All right, a big event. You've talked about a nuclear device being used by the North Koreans against the South.
The next use of a nuclear weapon
yes.
on this and globally
yes.
will be in anger will be by the North Koreans.
The North Koreans. Is there any update on what's going on with North Korea?
No, not from SciTec. Not from SciTec. North Korea is lining up missiles. I mean, they're putting them on transporter erector launchers, and there's at least six out there right now. So
six of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with nuclear devices.
No.
Capable of carrying nuclear
that's
devices.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Russia is in turmoil right now, Ed. Boris Yeltsin again ill. And the Chechnyan thing flaring up once again. Anything on that?
No, and that's not something I want to look at, Art. I just don't want to do that anymore.
Too much like the bad old days?
Yeah. This is a confluence of events. There's really no utility that's served by looking, in terms of predictive intelligence. All eyes in the Department of Defense and the Joint Staff are looking at that right now, as well as North Korea. So there's really nothing that technical remote viewing could do in terms of helping that situation out. I'd rather look at some positive things. There's a lot of doom and gloom out there.
I know.
And I think it's about time we turn our attention to some positive things. And that's what I want to do to start this new millennium off. And we have in-house a real showstopper coming up.
Oh?
It's the grand prize of remote viewing, and we're going to go for it. A big treasure hunt. Very significant treasure hunt. And it is...
What?
It's our new millennium project. Well, guess. It's a treasure hunt. We're
yes.
in SciTec. We're going to put an X on a pinpoint location of one of the grandest treasures in history.
And by that, I assume you don't mean a big chest filled with gold coins and trinkets.
No, actually we don't. That's not what that. Not the Lost Dutchman mine. Not General Yamashita's treasure. Something else.
Are you going?
Something else is very apropos to the changing millennium.
Are you going to tell us?
Yeah.
You are?
Pinpoint the location of what is arguably one of the greatest treasures and spiritual symbols of antiquity. It was a material symbol of God's covenant with man, the Ark of the Covenant.
I'd finally gotten there. I was about to say that. You're going to locate the Ark of the Covenant?
We're going to pinpoint it. We're going to put an X right on the location, and we're going to put the map on our website. I'll keep you posted.
And when you do?
Well, we're going to do it incrementally. First, we'll narrow it down. So what we'll do on that, we'll set aside a separate section on our website for this project. And as we work it, we'll show you what we've got. So, for instance, we already know in SciTec that the Ark is extant, that it exists. The reason we know this is because I employed my military team. I was training an operations officer for this country's psychic warfare team. Not warfare, but psychic intelligence collection team.
Right.
And I used the team to as advanced training project, so to speak, to locate the Ark, to take a look at it, see if it was real. And it was.
The Ark is real.
The Ark of the Covenant is real. So we want to know now, is it intact? Are its contents in separate places? If so, where are they?
Could it be opened, Ed? Should it be opened?
That's not for me to decide. That's not. If it should be, it will be. But we're going to go for this one. I remember when I ran the Sci-Spy team, I thought, why mess around with all these closed secret institutes in China and the Soviet Union and potential threat countries? Let's go for the juggler. Let's go after the sanctum sanctorum of Soviet decision makers, the Soviet Defense Council. Let's remote view their meetings and see what not only the intent of the Russians were in terms of military operations, but what their secrets were. So I did that. to great stead. And now I think in terms of a symbol of a renewed connection between man and God, that pinpointing the Ark of the Covenant would be a good project.
Let us say you do that, Ed. You would then have the ability to, prior to making that information public, going there. Would you do that?
No. I want to make the information accessible to the public as soon as we get it. As soon as we're going to home in on this.
Are you sure you would be doing a good thing?
I can't. To be sure would be to go into my mind. Mind is a very fallible thing. The wonderful thing about technical remote viewing is that you have to leave your ego and your intellectualization and your ratiocination outside of a remote viewing session. You have to drop all that behind. It's direct knowledge. So in a case like this, to make that kind of decision, you have to kind of go by your feelings, by your heart, so to speak. And it feels right to me.
Okay.
It feels like it's right for this thing to see the light of day.
All right, Ed.
If it's not, it's not meant to be.
Well, that's a good point. Hold it right there. We'll be right back. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. Ed Dames will be right back with your phone calls. There's just been another school shooting. Again and again and again and again, whether it's an adult or another student, our children are killing each other, our adults are killing our children. What in the hell is going on? Is that something you've looked at?
If you recall, yes, that was the incentive, children killing children, an unprecedented thing. That was the incentive.
Yes, I remember.
Why I looked in behind the scenes about a year ago at the idea that there may be some outside force that's influencing people, and that inspired me to take a look and see if that was indeed the case. That's when I turned my attention to the idea of Satan.
Yes, I recall. And I, you know, I just had to ask again because you said there's going to be a lot more of it, and unfortunately, you've been dead on that one too. There's been a lot more of it. Just unbelievable stuff. You almost cannot attribute it to anything but satanic influence. I mean, it just wouldn't happen. Children just don't go into a school and randomly start shooting their fellow students and teachers. It just doesn't happen, except it's happening more and more. I don't know. All right. Anyway, I promise. So, first time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Oh, I can barely hear you. You're going to have to yell at us, son.
Hi, Art. Hi, Major Dames.
Hi.
It is so good to be with you tonight. Art, I'm a big fan of your show.
Thank you.
And Major Dames, you are one of my favorite guests.
Where are you?
I am in Grouse Creek, Utah.
Okay.
And I have really three quick questions, and then I'll hang up so you guys can do the talking.
All right.
Which is what I would most like to hear.
All right.
But first of all, Major Dames, is there a personality trait in all of your training different people or a set of characteristics that make a better viewer, make a better trainee that perhaps can intensify their adeptness?
All right. All right, that's one. Two.
And then, I am LDS. And contrary to some opinion, we are not cultists, and we do believe in Jesus Christ and the things that he taught. However, are you familiar with the Book of Mormon? And he talked about looking for the Ark of the Covenant. Have you ever thought about looking for the supposed golden plates from which the Book of Mormon was translated?
Okay, and three?
And three, on a more frivolous note, supposing you had a three-year-long yearning or knowing that you were going to meet this certain person, he doesn't know you exist. Is there any way to see if what kind of odds there are in these two people?
That would be your soulmate. All right, I've got them. Ed, let's take them in order. Is there any sort of personality trait or type of person who is better suited to remote viewing?
The general answer is no, except the people that do the best in training are the ones that work the hardest and have a lot of patience with themselves. So we found the people like high school and college professors, people like that who, for instance, who grade papers, stay up all night, and plug away at the same thing, they seem to do quite well in remote viewing because you have to hang in there for 45 minutes in a remote viewing session. They do well. People that work with a lot of details, like auto mechanics or contractors who have to read blueprints and work on this detail work all day long, they do exceedingly well because they have a lot of patience. They know that they can't take any shortcuts. They've got to do the detail work bit by bit by bit. They do exceedingly well. There are no shortcuts in this work.
All right.
So those personalities work well. As far as question two, no, I have never looked for, nor do I intend upon looking for the golden plate, I think she mentioned.
All right, and the last, not
that's
not
the most interesting one.
It's not so frivolous, really. In other words, everybody yearns for, and few have, a soulmate, and she's envisioning hers, and he doesn't even know her yet, and is he out there? Is there some way she can...
What we do in my business is we can look at a person's, what we call a personal trajectory. I've mentioned this before. You can remote view those key events that are to the right on the timeline. By convention, the right is the future, left is the past, from a point that we call now. And so if I were to look at your personal trajectory, Art, I would pop up with things like, let's say, if you move, if you take a new job, anything that's emotionally powerful in your life,
right,
I can describe. However, there appears to be another type of trajectory, and that's one that is one's personal destiny, or an optimum trajectory is what we call it.
Mm.
What a person could be doing to maximize their potential in terms of fulfillment and happiness.
Yes.
So, if we were to look at this caller from Grouse Creek, Utah's personal trajectory, there may be a man in her future who she's going to meet and, let's say, marry. Okay?
Yes.
And that would be a fait accompli. It's going to happen if she did nothing, did not lift a finger.
Oh, I've got you, but I guess the real question is, could she use remote viewing to find that special person?
Yes. Yes, you can do that. But you have to be, and when you do this, you have to spend a lot of time on that person and sketch them, sketch the workplace, the environment, the personality of the person, so that you don't walk right by them. Because remember, on a personal trajectory, the path that you're going down, it's a given. You are going to meet up with these people on your personal trajectory because it's a done deal. On an optimum trajectory, that's a path that you are not on in most cases. Some
right.
people are on it.
Right.
There, you have to really be watchful, because if you're describing this person that is your optimal soulmate, or the person that is optimally you should be with next in terms of fulfillment,
right.
you may walk right by that person and never know.
Exactly. That's what you're
asking.
So
you have to be on your toes, and you need a good description. That's
so
what another technical remote viewing.
In other words, Ed, you could turn a crapshoot into a sure thing.
Yeah, that's correct. Yes. Yes, you can. So we call that an optimum trajectory. We use this to determine people's the best vocations, avocations, where they should live, and those kinds of things. And in many cases, it is not near what they are doing now.
Got
but it. It's supported by the universe.
All right. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi. Good morning, Ed. Excuse me. Earlier in the program, you mentioned about you remote viewed your death, and you look back and you saw what could have been. Now, that hit me like a swift kick in the gut. I wonder if I'm tracking you correctly, because what came to mind immediately to me was something out of Scripture, and I'll paraphrase, that said, when Christ said, the kingdom of heaven is spread upon the earth, but you can't see it. And is that, I have another question also, but is that sort of the thing we just, for some reason, can't see it? Am I totally off track here?
Tangentially, yes, but really no.
Okay. And another thing, too, about the Russian-Chinese, I know that you touched upon it, but I was wondering that, you know, to me, since December 98, China and Russia have formed the first time in history, at least as I know, a strategic alliance, and they're fully mobilized now under the pretext of Chechnya and Taiwan. And Yeltsin is not sick. He's going to China December the 8th. Do you think they're up to something?
Whether or not they're up to something, that's just as you might guess, Russia and China and prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
There's no need to say anything else.
All right, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and take care. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames and Art Bell. Good morning.
Yeah, hey, Art.
Where are you, sir?
Oh, I'm in Texas.
Okay.
Mm. Ed, first of all, I'd like to say that I'm listening to you guys on the Internet, and my connection, for some reason, just fell to nothing.
Mm.
So I don't know if I'm going to get to hear the answer. I was wondering if it's okay if I could stay on the line.
Yes, I will keep you on the line.
Thank you, Art. All right, Ed, earlier you mentioned Mars and these machines of some nature that reside there.
Yeah, one certain zone, yes.
Yeah, okay. I mean, what zone is this? Are we familiar with it? Would it be like Cydonia or anything? And the other question is, I mean, what is it they're protecting, or why are they there?
This was the subject of a report that my company did a long time ago. It appears that their escort, again, I'm going to have to speak almost metaphorically because we don't understand what these machines are. They're sort of like sentient vehicles, very, very, not robots per se, but they act as escort vehicles. There is a region in Mars, and where something underground exists, something important.
Like life?
Yes. Let's call it latent life, embryonic life. Let's just call it life right now.
Yeah. Embryonic life, that's interesting. So you're saying it's relatively young. It's not an
No, old, it's ancient.
It's ancient.
Yes. Very ancient. Anyway, these machines are, let's say, assigned to protect this area. Not necessarily protect, but they're escort vehicles. When a certain type of machine comes in the Martian atmosphere, these vehicles rise up and escort it down. So let me get technical just for a moment.
Sure.
There's a certain type of vehicle that occasionally enters the Martian atmosphere. It projects a neutrino beam down into the surface, down into the planet. If you think of a radar corner reflector, there's sort of a reflector that reflects back in response to this neutrino beam a glide path. Like a Loran for a commercial airliner that we have these days and times.
Sure.
It reflects back a glide path. This machine rides this glide path down to the interior of the planet. But there's at least one type of vehicle, this sand dollar-shaped, very large thing that rises up, and it's actually an emergency type of a vehicle. If anything goes wrong with this inbound vehicle, this emergency vehicle is there to assist.
So it's like an automated response, almost.
Yes, yes, it is. Uh-huh.
So
now, what happened to the Russian Phobos 2 probe was this sand dollar type of vehicle that is sitting in the sand and in Mars in that zone, when the Phobos 2 passed overhead in its orbit, this sand dollar sentient machine rose up to greet it and physically came in contact with it and mangled it like an untrained bird dog would to a duck. Or something like that. Very much like that. So, very Ray Bradbury-ish, but unfortunately that's what the entire military team came up with when we targeted that area.
There you are, caller.
Can I ask one last real small question?
Sure.
Does NASA know about this? And if they do, why haven't they said anything?
Oh, that's, in fact, let me enlarge on that. Last night we had Richard Hoagland on. With regard to the loss of this. And Richard believes that NASA, at the very highest level, or perhaps a cabal outside of NASA, is aware of some of the things you're talking about, Ed, that some elements of our government or a government within a government are aware of these things. Is that anything you can speak to?
It's not necessarily a conspiracy art. My peregrinations in and out of Washington, D.C. with various agencies, FAA, FBI, and other agencies in terms of mostly security, I have never come across an agency as arrogant as NASA. As unbelievable arrogance at the top levels of NASA. Now, I don't know if that's still the case, but when I went in and out of those hallowed halls, that it was unbelievable arrogance. It's like, we're going to take the taxpayers' money and do whatever we want, however we want to do it. And I had a lot of grievance with the SETI program at the time and said they were doing it the wrong way. As you know, I'm a big proponent of OSETI, optical SETI, where lasers should be used rather than radio waves. We've talked about this.
Yes, and by the way, I, of course, have interviewed SETI people, in fact, the head of SETI, and they don't necessarily disagree with you. But what they suggest is SETI, of course, is no longer privy to government money. It's all private, and they only have so much money, and they can only concentrate in so many areas, and they don't disagree that laser would be a pretty good approach, Ed. They just don't have the money for it right now.
I understand. My point is that simply that NASA is more arrogant than it is conspiratorial.
Well, there are a number of people who might agree with that, and I think more so now than then. NASA in the beginning was... Anyway, listen, Ed, we're at the end of this hour. Are you good to go?
I am if you are.
Oh, I'm always good to go.
I'm good to hook, as they say in the Rangers.
Yeah, all right, good. Hold it right there, then. This will go with one of your earlier statements regarding contact. Remember that? Oh, well, I told you at the beginning of the program that something has crashed into an Australian reservoir and that in the town of Guyra, G-U-Y-R-A. They now have police posted. They're not allowing people to drink the water. They're going to be sending divers down in the morning to try and locate whatever it is that crashed into the reservoir. And Ed said he might take a look at it sometime during the show. I wonder if you have yet, Ed.
No.
No?
I've been catching some Z's, actually.
Maybe before we're done. If you get an opportunity. If not, then next time. Listen, one more thing. Someone just sent a message that says, hey, Art, tell Ed this. Some people say that the Antichrist will use the Ark of the Covenant, as a footstool. I don't think it is such a good idea to find it. Scott in Dayton, Ohio. Any sense of that, Ed?
No.
Because I remember you have said the Antichrist is alive. I think you said that.
Yes.
So if you were to find it and put an X marks the spot, and you were the one to give the Antichrist that information, well, that wouldn't be good.
If it's meant to be found, it'll be found.
Okay. Well, that's a healthy attitude, I guess. First time caller line, you are on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Good morning, Art. My name is Rosemarie from Nova Scotia.
Nova Scotia.
Okay.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'd like to say thank you very much for your talk program.
Sure.
It's fascinating. It opens areas of thought and introspection I don't often think about. And my question to Major Ed Dames is that whether or not his remote viewing could see if there are possibilities of change in what seems to be some of the givens. I'm wondering if part of our problem as a race globally is that we've taken almost everything and made it into a business, whether or not it's the healthcare system, our own sense of survival, our lives, even what we've done with the health of the earth.
Yes.
It's like business, the profits of it. It supersedes our sense of humanity, our common sense. And I'm wondering whether or not if we as a species can change where we're coming from. Do you know what I mean?
In other words, for example, will the companies that sell storable food, if it gets rough, begin to give it away?
Where you give something back. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Ed, that is an interesting question. Will the nature of humanity change as times get difficult, or will it be a change for the worse?
At first, it'll be barbarism, and then after the real changes, it'll be a better age.
Better times coming, but it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Another fact. Please ask Ed, when the ice at the Arctic and or Antarctic melts, will we find evidence, do you suppose, of a lost civilization there? Atlantis, whatever else might have been before, will it suddenly appear?
I have not remote viewed, nor have any of my students or graduates that I know of remote viewed that art, so I don't
know. It'd be an interesting project, though, wouldn't it?
I've always been drawn to Antarctica. As you know, it was once in the Paleozoic, I think it was a green continent.
Mm-hmm. By the way, folks, the Chernobyl reactor that they had restarted is now shut down. Apparently, they restarted the Chernobyl reactor, and the last reactor they had there, and now they had a leak, a potentially dangerous leak, and it was shut down. Anything on the nuclear plants around the world, Ed, with regard to coming Earth changes and or just accidents?
Nothing that I want to talk about right now.
Really?
Yeah. There's, I've mentioned before that the first use of a nuclear weapon in anger will be North Korea, but there's a second use, there's a second incident that is actually an attack against a nuclear reactor. So it would be a tantamount to a bomb in place. It's not a nuclear weapon, but the effects in terms of fallout are the same. But I really don't want to go into that.
All right. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, good morning, Art. Good morning, Ed. This is Dan in Virginia.
Yes, Dan.
I have two questions. The first one concerns, I believe you call it Project Starman.
Correct.
Have you had any recent information on that project?
Yes and no. The no is that the time is just not right. We're not going to be able to induce contact, and we're just going to have to wait. The yes is something unexpected.
Okay. Secondly, do you get a sense of a magnetic pole shift in the near future?
I don't have a timeline on it. I know that it will occur, a collapsing magnetic field, but I don't have a timeline on that. It could be as late as say, around 2011.
And there are many that say what will happen is the magnetic field will collapse, and for a period of time, short or long, nobody really knows, there will be essentially no magnetic field. It'll be neutral, and then it will switch. Do you have any sense of whether there'll be a period of time in between or whether it'll be a very quick process?
I don't have a sense for that, Art.
Okay.
But we do have an idea that it is going to happen. Our guess, though, is around 2010. That's just a guess.
2010, all right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
I guess that would be me.
That's you, all right. Where are you?
I'm in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
It's always hard to tell if it's you that's next or not.
I know.
Can you tell me how to notice whether that you're next or...
Well, the only thing you can go by is you notice when I push the button, you hear
that noise.
A little noise.
Yeah.
That means it's you.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind. I had two questions. One, I hate to dig up what we've already covered, but... The question earlier was asked about the disc, the chauffeur disc on Mars.
Oh, Major Ed Dames.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And what about it?
And the guy asked about whether NASA was aware of that or not, and if so,
yes.
How come they're not revealing this?
Yes.
And that kind of got glossed over.
Well, not exactly. I think Ed more or less said no, but his comment about NASA was that he had never seen such arrogance. Is that about right, Ed?
Here's the picture. Remember I mentioned about the Soviets. They had additional photos that they did not release to the public. They're aware of this other vehicle, I'll call it a vehicle, this object that rose up from the surface of Mars. The thing that flashed that particle beam into the Phobos 2 spacecraft was in orbit around Mars. It was a long cylindrical vehicle, cylindrical object. The thing that rose up from the surface of Mars was a sand dollar shaped, very large, maybe 20 meters across, sand dollar shaped object. The Russians had photos of that, and they communicated these ideas to NASA. Now, put yourself in the position of a NASA scientist or administrator. What would you do? Nothing. What can you do? What would you think? Would you go to the American people and say, well, the Russians said this, or they have this photography, and, there's nothing that you would do.
But
you would just keep on keeping on?
Yeah, but obviously somebody then at NASA knows something more.
There are individuals at NASA that do, yes.
Oh, there we
but
go.
But that's not politically correct to suggest that. Again, we hark back to the same old bugbear about that's the UFO enigma. No government in the world is going to say that they don't know, because governments are supposed to have all the answers. People, when they run to the government, they run with the expectation
That's
that
right.
the government will know and be able to help them.
That's
the last
right.
answer in the world that a citizen of a country like the United States wants to hear from their leaders, scientific or political, is, we don't know.
Actually, you never hear that. You
That's
really
right.
can't hear that.
That's right.
Y2K may be the closest they've come to it, but even at that, there have been all sorts of assurances. Caller, does that answer your question?
Yeah, that does. I had another quick one, if I could.
Go.
Just pertaining the idea, I hate to sound conspiratorial, but to me...
No problem.
Or paranoid, but...
No
to me, paranoia is just nothing but including all possibilities in your thought processes. And my mind immediately goes to, well, because Ed was talking earlier about there's a certain threshold at which the collective comes to a consensus, so to speak.
Yes.
And there's a certain threshold at which it's not known, or you can't view that. So couldn't it be that Ed could come on, or anybody could come on your show, or who's ever show, and say and suggest something, and then that might kind of subliminally
you mean
give the indication.
A suggestion injected into the subconscious.
Yeah, and then
collective.
everybody starts thinking along those lines, oh yeah, that's going to happen, whether they know it or not.
Yeah, oh no, it's a tremendous question. Ed, a sort of a subliminal thought injected into the collective unconscious. Possible?
Well, I mean, that's really, in terms of memes and paradigms, are you familiar with the concept of a meme, a modern concept? A meme is an idea, true or false, right or wrong, that gets started and picks up speed, and then it becomes the paradigm, the given. And so how those things affect society and social steering is really up to people and the culture, and there's a lot of factors involved. Catastrophe theory or state-space analysis is a good way to analyze the trajectory of memes and how they evolve into paradigms. Whether or not those kinds of things eventuate in actions or behaviors is problematic. If they do, we can remote view it.
I'm not sure that answered my question. If somebody wanted to inject into the collective unconscious the concept that, oh, hell, I don't know, the sun is going to explode and wipe out Earth or whatever, some major something like that, would that...
we can discriminate in technical remote viewing between an idea and a the idea itself,
right,
and the physicality of an event. Okay.
All right.
That's an easily distinguishable thing, especially to skilled viewers. For instance, the idea that, let's say there's a movie out there about an explosion at a nuclear plant.
Right.
And it's a popular movie. And that happens to be the subject, the search subject of a professional remote viewer. They come up with an explosion at a nuclear plant. The professional remote viewer is going to know that the difference between the movie and the real event. So if there really is no explosion at a nuclear plant in the near future, and that's the subject of search, and the viewer comes up with the idea of this movie, they're going to know that, hey, this is not real. What I'm looking for does not exist. It's just a movie.
It's just a movie. I remember a movie about a nuclear meltdown.
It's been a too long time.
And then there was Three Mile Island.
With no peace of mind.
And Chernobyl.
And I'm ready for the times to get better.
But the movie... here comes a fax I want to read to you, and I don't...
Hold it, Art. I took a look at the down and dirty at that Gyra object. It's a man-made object. It's a piece of molten metal, like aluminum.
Really?
Yeah. So it's not. Anything else. You know, the Australian outback is an impact zone for a lot of tests. For instance, you're familiar with bunker busters.
Oh yes.
Well, you know there are nuclear bunker busters. Did you know that?
No.
Think of a warhead that has to go down into the earth. You know, there are command posts in certain parts of the world that are a mile deep.
Sure.
How do you get at them? Well, you build a warhead that can penetrate earth through a whole bunch of granite, thousands of feet of granite, before it explodes. Now, where do you think we test those?
Australia?
You got it.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Got that through remote viewing.
All
the reason why was because it was an enigmatic seismic event there once, and seismologists from around the world could not figure out what kind of thing this was. And that's what it was. It was the impact of one of these devices that was being tested.
God, we're idiots. All right, here's the facts. Hi, Art. Sorry for the interruption, but I'd like to have a response to this. A couple of years ago, after several days of brainstorming over some of the alleged Martian artifacts, I finally threw in the towel and went to bed still obsessing. When that twilight state finally started to steal over me, I seemed to see a large dark space, comparatively speaking. It was to the space shuttle hangar as that edifice is to an outhouse, hanging suspended under a truncated funnel-shaped roof is a huge black, a blue-black ball shape, not connected to anything that I can see. In the entrance to the chamber is a pedestal, triangular in shape, made of glass or some clear crystal, with a beveled face tilted at 30-odd degrees. This turned toward the entrance. There's much more, but due to time constraints, I decline to go any further. Could you ask Ed if he has seen anything like this?
On Mars?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Below Mars, actually.
Yeah, very, very interesting things below Mars. Ancient and advanced, very interesting things. There are certain structures like this on Earth's moon, our own moon too.
So
both on the surface and below the surface.
Old and new at the same time.
Well, I'd say there's no way to tell how old they are. It could be a million years, it could be a half a million years or more, but they are the structures that were built by an advanced technology, and they're there. And there are moving parts there, too. There are actually moving things.
That's why you say machines.
Well, no. There are parts of these structures that are actually moving. They fulfill some type of a function that I don't quite understand.
Gotcha. All right, first time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Thanks. Good morning, Art. And, oh, I'm so glad I got through, Major Dames. I've tried to call before. I really enjoy this evening, and some of it's so over my head, and some of it's, but it's, I feel connected. I wanted to ask Major Dames if he is giving any lectures anytime soon in the Los Angeles area. And I also wanted to ask, I called before, Art. I got you on this line. I'm sorry I'm calling on the first-time caller line, but I was trying to ask a question about visions and psychic stuff, and I wondered, I tried a long time ago to get through to Major Dames, but I wondered if natural, you know, like visions and psychic ability or whatever, predispose someone to be able to do technical remote viewing, and in other words, is this something I'd want to pursue? Not on a financial basis, just for my own curiosity, because I've had eerie, predictive type visions.
All right. Well, that's a clear question, and I think we've dealt with it before. The question really is, does a natural psychic ability predispose one to be a better remote viewer?
If they follow the protocols that I have established for these tapes, the same ones that I use to teach the military team, if the natural does that, they can become, instead of just a professional, an all-star. But I have found, my experience as a teacher, I've been teaching this since 1983, is that naturals, they have to unlearn what they think they know to be good. And that's difficult for many of them to do. They've had these experiences, they've grown to trust them, but many times they've been wrong, as often as not. So naturals can have a hard time with the very rigorous structure that remote viewers use. I was a psychic as a rock. I had no psychic ability whatsoever. Now I'm damn good because I've been doing this a long time. But naturals who maintain the same type of rigor can far exceed what I could do. But they've got to be able to toe the line.
I talked with Ingo Swann not long ago, and he is going to come on the program pretty soon.
Ingo Swann was a guy, he is essentially the Wright brothers of remote viewing. He is the father of remote viewing.
Mm-hmm.
And my career to Ingo Swann. Of course, we took his discovery, I took it personally, into the deep dark confines of the military and turned it into a militarily useful tool and then evolved it. But without Ingo, there would be no technical remote viewing.
How do you think Ingo felt about that use of his discovery? I mean, I'll ask him, but I mean, what do you think?
I think Ingo, as my mentor at the time, felt actually patriotic. He felt like he was doing his patriotic duty. He had a lot of other feelings that are personal in nature and I won't go into. But it was actually patriotism that drove him.
Okay.
He felt like he was serving his country.
Gotcha. Wild card line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames and Art Bell. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. It's Tim calling from Cold Lake, Alberta, F-18 base.
Hi, Tim.
Hey, Ed.
Hi.
I was on the last time you're on. I just want to go over this, just skim on this, because I do have a good question for you. But that missing Lear jet, remember it was, I threw it out there as a caveat for you, and you're going to take it, and then that morning?
That's right.
That's
that
right.
Was a strange synchronistic thing, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, strange. That jet was lost how long ago?
Three years, like over 1,000 days, so it'd be greater, the odds are greater than 1,001 that would have been found.
And it was found on the very night we talked about it. You're right. Yeah,
exactly. That morning, it was about 3 in the morning. It was found, I guess, around close to noon that day.
That's right.
But, hey, maybe if we talk about...
Now, why did you ask that? I'm curious as to why you even asked that I look at that. What prompted that?
It was just in the back of my mind. I came across a website quite a while before that, and it kind of lodged in my mind, and it just, it was pushed out or it came out. I don't know. It's nothing I really planned, but...
So, maybe if we mention something.
So maybe that was precognitive in nature. You asked the question. So you are unconscious. It's like just like an iceberg, where our conscious awareness, the one that you're using right now, that part of your brain to listen to me and focus on what I'm saying, is only the tip of the iceberg. Our unconscious mind is all that surface area, that both the surface and the bulk below the liminal gate, and that is extremely knowledgeable about many, many things. Very, very powerful. So we think we know a lot, but the unconscious portion of our mind is really the powerful one, and to be able to utilize that is what we teach people how to do.
Or perhaps what's that old saying? Ask and ye shall receive.
Yeah, exactly.
Not the door shall be open unto
you. Exactly.
Yes.
In other words, what you your question could have been prompted by a precognitive experience. That's one certainly possible answer.
And there's more to it than that. There could have been a dialogue at the unconscious level between a number of people, myself included, that we are not consciously aware of. All that exists right there. It's that, you know, you have to reach down into that murky area, but it's all there. There's parts of us that we never know, usually, as individuals. That's why I like my work so much.
Just kind of leave that alone because I've got a question, but maybe perhaps if we mention the Mars Polar Lander, because remember going to six-day mode, safety mode, which would be today, Thursday again, but it goes into a safety mode. It had a hard landing or something. Today would actually be the last day when the safety mode would come off, the six-day mode. So perhaps if we ask again, maybe it'll come on if it didn't burn up, but who knows.
Well, if you listened earlier.
It appears to have burned up. It appears to have vaporized.
No kidding.
I did not use a team to work this. I worked it myself. So there's a 15% error rate. When you work as a remote viewer, and you technically remote viewing, a single individual has a 10% error rate. A neophyte with someone with less than 6 months of training has about a 15 to 20% error rate. So I run about 10% error. So there's a 90% chance that it burned up in the atmosphere. If I were to have used three other viewers and controls, I could give you a 100% answer.
Gotcha. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Where are you, please?
I'm in Charleston,
South Carolina. All right.
Hey, Ed, I'd always like when you come on. I have one question. I hate to keep making you go back there, but I feel like maybe you're coming across wrong, and I wish you'd put me straight on this, and that concerns, you know, this experience where you're looking back on your life. I know in previous shows you said that you were a Christian and all, and what it sounds like is, you know, you found the secret to life, and I can imagine, like, Jesus, you know, telling his followers and disciples the same thing and then say, well, but I'm not going to tell you because you got to buy my tapes and do your own work.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
No, that isn't what he said.
Well, I didn't think so, but I don't know why it is that you leave us hanging.
Well, first of all, Ed looking back on his own life and or the potential of Ed's life is not the same as you looking back on yours. So I guess in a sense, if you want to look back on yours using TRV, then buying the tapes, yeah, be a good idea.
Right.
But that is not at all.
No, but he indicated a higher, that this would, you know, he found something that would be good for all of us.
Essentially, it's something that I think that individuals sporadically have known throughout history. And if one were to think about what it would be like to dump their ego completely, mm-hmm. all the conceptions of what you think you are, mm-hmm. and if you could look and perceive your own soul, just focus on that, your own soul, get rid of all of your ego and all your preconceived notions about who you think you are. The soul is an embryo, like a baby. We think that we're this flesh and blood thing, this thinking mind. But the only thing that's lasting is that soul. And if you expose that soul to its creator, if you can actively do this, you know, using your heart and your mind, so to speak, expose it to the creator's love, We are pure light, and we're like a star. We're almost as bright as a star. And I'll leave it at that for right now. But the potential is amazing. It has nothing to do with remote viewing. It has to do with an indomitable will to dump your ego and expose your soul to the Creator, God, if you will.
All right. That's a good answer. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello. Where are you?
Whittier, California.
Okay, you're going to have to yell at us. You're not so loud.
Okay. Ed, I was wondering if you or your colleagues have ever remote viewed the JFK assassination and what information you could tell us about it?
Yes, we've covered that in earlier shows. There was a device in the dashboard of the car that fired on remote control. In addition to the high velocity heavy caliber round that hit JFK from outside of the car, there was a flechette that penetrated his Adam's apple and went through the back of his neck, and that was fired from inside the car by something that appears to have been in the dashboard. So it was a conspiracy. I did not like that answer at all when I remote viewed it. And when Mel Riley remote viewed it, Mel Riley was this country's first psi spy. We did that together. I was not happy with the answer. And then I became very angry at the arrogance of somebody in the government who set up the President of the United States for assassination.
Did you account for the headshot?
We did. The headshot was real. I mean, it was a high-caliber round. It was fired from outside the car. But everybody knew that. What I didn't know was that the flechette was fired from the inside of the car.
That may answer, in fact, why so many experts have puzzled at the ability of Oswald to get off so many shots in such a short time so accurately.
Can I ask one more question, Art?
Sure.
Did Oswald actually fire shots? Was he part of it?
I don't know if it was Oswald. All we looked at, so here's how we remote view. I place myself, in this case, as an advanced target, I place myself in a position of JFK in the car. After about 20 minutes of work in technical remote viewing, I can feel from which direction I'm taking hits, and I can sketch that. I'm taking a hit from here, I'm taking a hit from there. Now, this is just an idea in your mind. You are not really there. This is not your body, out-of-body experience. It's nothing like that. That's something else. This is the idea as it exists as a pattern of information. So you feel where the hits are coming from, and then you track back the origin of the shots. Now, when I did that, I didn't look at who fired the shots. I only wanted to know what direction and how they originated. And we lost interest in the outside shots when we found this flechette thing.
Yeah, I can understand how you would. I mean, that would be such a revelation that everything else would be lost after you found that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. East of the Rockies, good morning. You're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Yeah, I really am enjoying the show. I'm Kay from Oklahoma.
Hi, Kay.
Hi. Ed, every time you come on the show, it seems like a blind person calls or some blind person calls, and you have said, like on your last show, that a blind person could learn to remote view. And what I'm curious to know is if I were to buy the tapes, would I be able to learn? I'm also totally blind. Would I be able to learn how to remote view, or do I need somebody that already knows, you know, the ropes, so to speak?
You have to have somebody, a sighted person who has viewed the tapes, hold your hand through stage one. There's four stages that are important in remote viewing. You have to have a sighted person do that in stage one and again in stage three. And that would take you about, maybe 4 days to learn. After that, you're on your own. You can do it on your own.
Does it have to be a sighted person that knows about remote viewing, or do they just need to tell me what's...
No, they could just...